Today on the AAV Podcast, we welcome Vidal Messiah, founder of the Northern Kings AAU program, as we discuss his Final Four experience down in Phoenix this year, his AAU program, the renaissance or the golden era of Canadian basketball, in case you haven't noticed, the MVP race in the NBA, plus more. To subscribe to the podcast and the blog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAAV.com. It's the AAV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AAV Radio. Let's go.
Welcome to the AAV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AAV Radio.
My next guest is the coach and the founder of the Northern Kings AAU basketball program that's really taken off in the last few years. He's also a St. Bonaventure alumnus, has played professionally overseas and for Team Canada. But most importantly, he bleeds Eastern Commerce blood.
Yes, sir.
He was my teammate during those Eastern Commerce days. And, you know, only in Canada is it expected for 6'3 and 6'5 dudes to control the paint on defense on a regular basis. But, you know, that's a whole other story altogether. We did our thing, though. At least we did hold it down, at least, at the very
we
least.
We made it happen, bro.
We made it happen. ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, please welcome Vidal Messiah to the show. What up, Vi?
What's going on, CC, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. You know, I've been watching your movements in the last few years, man. You're doing your thing out here, man.
I appreciate it, man. It's been a grind. It's a daily grind, but... you know, when they say when you love what you're doing, it never feels like work. So,
true.
You know, I'm just kind of blessed to be involved in the game still. And, yeah, man, it's just an amazing time to be part of this opportunity as the game grows and develops here. So, I'm blessed.
Yeah, no doubt. And I seen that you were in Phoenix and you went down to the Final Four and got up on that whole experience. What was that like?
You know what? That was amazing, man. It was a last-minute trip. You know, we had a kid from our program, you know, Dwayne Notice, an alumni of ours that came through our program 4 years ago. And, you know, he made the Final Four. So, I mean, that freed up some tickets. And we booked the trip, you know, myself and the kid Augustine, and went down there just to soak it all in. It was everything you can imagine and more, man. The Final Four is the epitome of college basketball. And I've never witnessed a game with that many people. So, I mean, to have it in a football stadium with 70,000 people, you know, kind of made it unreal. Mm-hmm. Probably it made for the best game, to be honest with you, just, you know, given the fact that it was so big and the players probably had a tougher time shooting in that kind of, you know, atmosphere. But just amazing, man. I used to see so many people, you know, take part in a celebration, just, you know, the networking, all the college coaches, all the fans, the bands, you know, the whole nine. So, you know, to just enjoy that moment with him and his family and to be there and, you know, just to witness that. I mean, they came at South Carolina. They came from the bottom of the SEC when he first went there to make it a Final Four run as a senior. You just can't ask for much more.
But it's funny. I got to ask, though, like, do you like these Final Four games being played in these football stadiums? Because I know, like, 20 years ago, I had a chance to go to the Final Four in San Antonio. I think that was the year that Jamal actually he won the title. I think they played Utah.
Okay, nice.
So I had a chance to go see it in the Alamo Dome, and the Alamo Dome is not as big as the stadium out in Phoenix. But we had nosebleed seats, but like we were so far up. But I'm like, man, like as a player, I'm like, it's, I don't know, man. It's got to be a weird situation just being in that environment. And I know they're not going to change it anytime soon because they've been playing these Final Four games in football stadiums for years. So I know it's not going to be reversed, but I don't know. I find it a little weird to play in that kind of environment when it's that big.
Yeah, I mean, we had amazing seats. You know, we sat with the families, and we were, you know, literally like two rows, you know, from the court. So
right.
we had a great perspective of the game, but I can imagine as a player, yeah, I mean, you're just not used to playing in that kind of space. And especially for, you know, I mean, if you're a shooter, you know, the depth perception now completely changes. So that's going to make it a bit more difficult. But,
right.
You know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, the players want to be on the big stage, you know, and the court is a stage at that point because it's actually elevated and they're on a stage, you know, so to speak. So, you know, I'm not sure what they can do to change that. I mean, having it at a regular, well, I guess they could use a more basketball friendly type, you know, venue. But then again, you're not going to put 70 people in a basketball arena. So when it comes down to dollars and cents,
yeah,
you know,
that's
what it is.
That's not getting reversed anytime soon. Nobody's giving up money.
No doubt.
At the same time, too, I got a chance to follow Notice a little bit during the Final Four run. And as for you, as somebody who coached him, how great was it to watch him dunk to wrap up, you know, that trip to the Final Four in New York?
Well, that play was obviously was a huge play. But what I liked most about it was, you know, his things throughout the tournament and, you know, throughout the Final Four run really, you know, really was his defense. Right, I think he showed the whole country, you know, and that was the team, you know, philosophy and identity as well. But him in particular, just shutting down some of these key matchups, you know, and that's where he really made his name, you know, throughout the tournament. But he's struggling in that game offensively. But the plays he made on defense and that breakup dunk, if you look at it, despite his poor shooting and his poor night offensively, he made key plays and key stops that still kind of kept him in that realm of player of the game, or, like, you know, top player of the game, or right, that, you know, that deciding player of the game. Like, he came up with those kind of plays.
Right.
And that's what you want to see from a senior. That's what you want to see from a winner, is that they're not letting their offense, like most young players do, affect the rest of their game. And that's what I was most proud about, is that he still found a way to contribute and, you know, help his team out. And to just cap it off with a dunk. Were they at the Garden? I think that was at the Garden, right? In New York City, on that stage, you know, it was just, you know, amazing, man. I mean, no one would have thought that. I was at a senior night a couple of weeks prior, and, you know, they had a good team, at a top 25 team this year. You know, you knew they were solid, and, you know, they would, you know, win a couple games in the tournament, but I don't think anyone thought they'd make a Final Four run, you know, playing that style. But, you know, that's what the tournament's all about. You know, it definitely comes down to a matchup of styles, right? And they were able to, you know, control the tempo of each game and dictate the pace, and it worked.
Without question. And like I said, for you, that has been a great moment, though, just as an ex-coach, and just, you know, seeing that whole thing just play out like that. And because, again, I don't know him, and I was proud of him when I saw that. That had to have been, like, the best feeling in the world at that moment.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, I mean, anyone who knows the history of our program, and we're still, you know, relatively young. You know, we're the underdog. You know, we're not the, you know, the big sponsor team. You know, we're not the team without a hoopla. You know, we're grinders. So, I mean, again, like, he went there. You know, he wasn't highly recruited. You know, actually had no offers. And wow, we kept grinding. You know, we kept grinding to, you know, just to make things happen, to build his profile. He had a really good senior season at St. Thomas More. Picked up some interest there, but, you know, it was a grind for him. It was, you know, using that senior year to grind out some interest, to grind out some offers. And at the end of it, you know, with us just, you know, pushing out updates to coaches and text messages and just letting everyone know how he was doing, he was able to land something at South Carolina. So, you know, it's very much the underdog story. If you squeak something out, you know, I think it was Frank Martin just got the job, so it was around this time of year, you know, when that coaching, you know, carousel is going at high speed, you know, Frank landed there. They picked him up at the bottom of the conference. So that's what I'm most proud of, the fact that he, you know, he's grinded his way through this thing. You know, it's like a lot of kids, especially kids in Canada lately, you know, they've been on the other side of it where they've had immediate success. You know, they've made it all the way, you know, whether it be the one and done that he's had, you know, the All-Americans, the Player of the Year, you know, Dylan Brooks in the Pac-12. We've had some guys do some, you know, major things at the next level. So
right.
He wasn't quite that story. His was a four-year grind of turning a program around, you know, and then in his senior year, you know, helping lift his team to a whole other level. and making it to the biggest stage. So I was most proud of really the character that displayed, and that tells you a lot about who he is.
You know what? I'm going to just transition a little bit here just about just your program with Northern Kings, and, you know, I forgot to mention the Hoop Factory. Like, I know the game of basketball has brought you a lot, and you've had a career from basketball and everything else, but what made you start this program?
Yeah, just I mean, I'm blessed, man. Just the timing of what I was doing and where my interests were, and, you know, just the different opportunities that I had at that time. You know, some of the advice that I got at the time. So just being at the right place at the right time, just being, you know, prepared, you know, in a full opportunity, and then seeing the opportunity. So, you know, the game here was at the point when I started the program, and really, you know, the heart and soul of the program really is our camps.
Yeah.
You know, the Hoop Factory. So, you know, that's an entry point for kids to just get in and participate in basketball, learn about it, you know, work at it, you know, learn about the fundamentals, and learn about the footwork, you know, learn about passing, and, you know, all the things that you used to get when we came up, mm-hmm. you know, as kids, where kids went to camp to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, camp is where you learn about the game and met other kids, and, you know, so it really starts, you know, with that, is just getting kids in and having them introduced, you know, to the game, and, you know, working at it, and then the kids that have a lot of talent. But it's time, you know, there is an extension of our program through the Kings that I oversee.
Right.
You know, so the two aren't directly, you know, connected, but they somewhat are in the fact that I'm involved in both. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, our camps help to grow kids, you know, that we get into our camps, obviously, but also a lot of the kids in our programs, sorry, a lot of kids on our teams also train, you know, within our camp system. So, you know, it gives us a chance to work more hands-on with them throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
We have more contact, you know, with them. And that's really the training ground, you know, for our players and our athletes, especially at the youth level. And then, you know, once they're good enough, you know, to play, you know, competitive basketball, you know, we have teams, Cuban Northern Kings, that are set up. You know, we have an academy that's housing now about 15 teams, and, you know, we want to grow that to about 30. And, again, it's just, you know, really using that pool of talent to teach the game, you know, to spread, you know, spread the positive, you know, messages that kids can learn, you know, through the game, and, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, that we've learned in terms of life lessons and whatnot. You know, but just using the camp setting and just using that platform to grow the game more than anything. And then if you got elite players or if you know how to, you know, market and coach and expose talent, which we do through Northern Kings, then it's only, you know, a matter of time before some of the kids, you know, within your pool start to develop and really show themselves. So it's not no secret sauce that we got. It's not a magic potion. It's just really old-fashioned basketball. It's just, you're getting kids in the gym, working on the fundamentals, you know, just getting them going.
Just getting them to work, basically, right?
Getting them to work, building up a work ethic, you know, especially, you know, when they're young, right? You know, building up the capacity to work. I think all these things are important at the youth level, right? You know, the elite level athlete, the sport-specific training, you know, there's a time and place for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think having that athletic base, you know, having that competitive spirit, you know, a lot of those things are developed typically at a younger age. So we try to use the camp setting, you know, for those things. And then as the cream rises to the top, you know, we've been able to attract some high-level athletes and, you know, some guys that have gone out to represent Canada at various levels, you know, and they've been high-level athletes. So they've gone on and they've you know, ended up in really good situations in terms of universities down south. And you know, we built a name in terms of, you know, being able to do that. Is get young talent, you know, develop that talent, showcase it, market it, and then, you know, help it be placed at the next level. And, you know, it's all about the kids, and that's that, you know, that's their dream, it's their hard work, and, you know, we're here kind of just as a vehicle to make that happen.
Yeah, no question, because other things I got asked too, just like, do you think there's a ceiling in AAU to grow? Like, can you think the culture could be, like, elevated? And the reason I'm asking this is because even from when you, like, when we were playing back in the day, like, the AAU has that culture too, where it's like, it's almost like the kids are playing, and once their usefulness is done for that program, it's like, okay, all right, on to the next kid. I don't care what happens to this other one, you know? And you know, and for some of these kids, it's like some of these kids, you know, end up going across the states or whatever and doing their thing over, you know, playing wise and all that stuff. But then there's others that, you know, that don't end up in a situation where they're graduating high school or, you know what I mean? Or at least making it to that next level. So like, where do you see this culture going now? Like in this sense, like of the AAU growing and all that, at least, especially in Canada.
Yeah. I think AAU, you know, does kind of carry some negative baggage, you know, unfortunately. I mean, I don't think it's all true or it's all accurate. I mean, like in anything else, you got your good and your bad programs and coaches.
Right.
You know, I think in Canada, I think we have a unique opportunity, you know, to kind of shape our own path and build our own, you know, culture, you know, so to speak. I think it's still early here. So I think it's still growing. I think that culture is still kind of sorting itself out. I think it's still evolving. I'm hoping that it's going to, you know, not turn into that ugly beast that just kind of, you know, uses kids and spits them out and has no real regard for their, you know, for their long-term, you know, life and future. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think we pride ourselves on being a bit different personally with our program. I think we advise our kids, you know, and I'm having, you know, conversations daily with our kids, you know, whether it be about, you know, choosing a university, you know, potentially, you know, transferring. You know, we have a kid right now that's going through a transfer process.
Yeah.
So, you know, they need advice on that. But, you know, for me, it's always about the big picture. You know, I think, you know, basketball, you know, when you're a kid, you can't see it because you're a kid. But, you know, you think you're going to play for your whole life. And as we know at our age, you know, that's not the reality. So, you know, the academic piece and, you know, their academic, you know, career and, you know, their interests and goals outside of basketball, I think has to play a huge role in making some of these decisions. And I think we pride ourselves on, you know, conducting business in that fashion where it's really about the athlete. It's the athlete first. It's the individual first. You know, what do they need? What are their chances of really succeeding in basketball? Should this decision be more heavily weighed on academics than basketball? You know, what is the basketball potential? What kind of ambitions, you know, do they have at playing at the next level? You know, is this school conducive to that? So, you know, all of these things, you know, for a kid 17, 18 years old, you know, that's a lot to handle. That's a lot to consider. So, you know, I think that's my primary role. That's really why I got into it. If you ask me, you know, just going back to the last question of, you know, why I started, really on the competitive piece, it was, you know, working with some kids, you know, for an extended, you know, period of time, you know, getting them to a certain level physically, you know, with their game. But because I wasn't involved with the coaching aspect, you know, in terms of helping them make decisions and wise choices, I wasn't involved in that process. You know, and things didn't always work out, you know, for those kids. So, you know, not to say that with me, things would have been completely different, but I definitely knew that I had some different ideas and perspectives on how I would advise kids. So, you know, I think we take the high road, you know, as much as we can and, you know, just try to, you know, make sure kids are making decisions, you know, about life and not just about basketball.
Which I think is important too, because it's funny, like I was in a shoe store like a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I was there with my family and we're trying on shoes, and one of the shoe salesmen comes to me and he's like, you know, my son is playing with him and stuff, and he's like, man, it's your son's active. He's like, you know what? He's like, yo, man, you better get your kid in ball like soon, you know, because he's like, yo, you know, like if he doesn't get into it right away, the way the AAU stuff goes, you know, like I don't know where he's going to be. And I'm thinking like, man, like that's okay. That's your advice. But at the same time, I'm like, yo, my kid's still in diapers. Like let's slow this down a little bit. You know what I mean? Cause we had this conversation offline where it's like, there's kids out there that are like, you know, or people out there telling these guys like, you know what, you know, come to my program. Da 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 da. If you're not doing this at like 11 years old, it's like your career's over. And it's like, they're still kids. There's so much time to develop. So when I see this stuff and get that advice, I kind of laugh where I'm just like, yo, like, dude, let's slow this down a little bit, man. Like, even if the kid's 13 years old, what if he picks it up and he starts being good? Like, you're telling me because he didn't start it at 9? Like, that's it? Like, this hoop career, his hoop dreams are done? It's interesting to see like the different aspects of it, of how people think. It's so specialized now, but like, you know, as you know, you got to develop these kids and just show them just real life values just through the work and stuff too, which is what you're doing, right? So it's,
but, a lot of people kind of just miss the boat too. Like, basketball is definitely a highly skilled game,
right?
You know, you gotta have, you know, you gotta have the, you know, you gotta have, you know, all the fundamentals. You gotta have a good strong base in your skill sets, but you know, there's some other things that definitely, you know, play a big role in making a player and developing a player, and then, you know, ultimately in a player being a good player.
Right.
And it's not just skills.
No.
You know, it's IQ, it's, you know, motivation, it's, you know, determination, it's work ethic, it's a lot of character based things, right? So that's really how I attack my development plan when I work with athletes. It's really a balance of physical and mental. It's not all these physical things that people think that you have to master and have and do and understand. I mean, the reality is once you're on a team, you're probably going to be asked to do something more specific, you know, and you know, defined, right? So, you know, it's as a young player, how do you build your game, you know, around your strengths, mm-hmm. you know, and what are your strengths? And then, you know, how motivated are you? How passionate are you? You know, what's your work ethic like? Like, all those things can be developed. So it's just one of those things where, you know, the whole training business, the whole training industry, and, you know, I guess, you know, some call it the AAU world, but I think it's much bigger than that. You know,
yeah.
It's there's big money in basketball, right, at the top level. You know, I mean, the contracts that are about to be handed out in the next 2 or 3 years, the new, you know, CBA are going to break records. And, you know, there's a correlation, you know, between big money and participation, you know, in anything. So
you're
going to see more kids participating, more families thinking, you know what, my kid's going to play a sport. You might as well play a sport with a lot of, you know, return at the end of it if we're going to invest time, energy, you know, and money. Right, and that's you know, that's the attractiveness of basketball is, you know, overnight you can go from having nothing to having everything, you know, financially, you know, so you know, it's you know, it's part nature of the beast too. Like, you got people jumping into it and working with kids, and you know, you got people, parents with that mindset of it, he's got to do this now, if you know, or else we're gonna miss the boat. Right, but again, you know, I think if you know what you're doing, you know, the reality is, you know, you want to instill some, you know, core principles and values, and build a work ethic and build a capacity. Like, some of these things are, for me at least, more foundational, because you could pick up skill and even expedite how fast you pick them up if you're able to work.
Yeah,
if you're determined. If you're motivated, right? If you don't got no motivation, you know, it's tough. So, I mean, it's all perspective, man. It's all experience, I think. And, you know, it is what it is.
No, I hear you. But, and you know what? I'll give you props, too, because, like, just going back to the fact that you went to go to the Final Four to check out one of your former players, I think that's, honestly, I think that's cool because, you know, like, when you see some programs and stuff, it's like, yeah, it's like once, as I mentioned before, it's like once they're out of the program, it's like, yeah, he played for me, but like, you're not really checking on him. So the fact that seeing that you're right there going to check your players and stuff, even like, you know, long after they're gone from your program, I think that's dope.
No doubt. We tell our kids, when like, once you're a king, you're always a king, man. Cause I mean, we're going to, you know, we're going to ask a lot of you as an athlete, you know, in our program, you know, we're going to, you know, demand that you play hard and that you play defense. A lot of things that you wouldn't normally associate with AAU basketball. You know, I definitely know the culture within our program is very different in that sense, where it's like, we're preparing you for the next level. These are some of the elements that you have to understand, dude. Like, you got to be on time.
Yeah.
Like, the bus is going to leave. You know, you got to be taking care of your academics. You know, you got to work hard. You know, you got to be, you know, you got to be able to, you know, to process things on the fly and to, you know, and to pick things up and to, you know, be able to ask questions and to work with other people, you know, to be a good teammate, to, you know, to lead. There's all these different elements that these kids have to develop, right? So, you know, you're not so much finding within our program, you know, relationships that are built off of that, You know, so all the kids that I'm working with, we push them. We've, you know, we really ask a lot of them. So we've, you know, we continue to support them even after they've left the program. They're still part of our program. You know, they're our alumni, and they're really they're a testament to what we do. So, you know, I got to stay connected, and you know, I'm there to help them in their lives, right? I think you know, like a good coach and someone who knows what it's really about, you know, understands that, you know, it's that coach player in the relationship is a lifelong relationship if you got a real coach. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I still talk to my college coach up until this day. The guy that recruited me still calls me, he still checks on me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what I know, right? So I mean, you know, for me it's not abnormal.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you know, what I've been conditioned to, you know, to understand. So, and then the kids need it. Like, I know that, just going through that process myself. Once you make it to college, doesn't mean, you know, you don't need anybody. You're like, nah, you still need people. Like, you still need that support because it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be like, you know, like the kid I coached down in Atlanta, Isaiah Dennis, he's just graduating from Georgia State. One of the nicest kids I ever coached, a great athlete, and just wrapping up his senior year there. And he wrote like a letter to the fans. And I thought it was like just perfect because, you know, what he described was like, you know, he was thanking them for like some of the best and worst times of his life. Mm-hmm. You know, he experienced, you know, some of the most joyous moments, and he experienced like, you know, some of the deepest pains. Right, like college basketball is hard. I mean, it's fun, but it's really hard, and that's kind of the roller coaster that you ride sometimes as an athlete. You know, playing Division I basketball, so you need that support. Mm-hmm. You need that person who's been there to help you through those tough times. So
yeah,
you know, all the guys that I've coached, you know, it's open door, man. They call me, they text me, we talk. You know, we laugh, you know, whether it just be, hey, you know, how you doing, or hey, man, you know, I want to talk about something, you know, just whatever it is, you know, we're here to support them.
And I mean, that's the thing you put in too, like the core values and everything else, right? It's like a reflection of life, you know what I mean? Like, you just, yeah, as long as you have those things in there, you know, you could succeed whether it's on the court or off the court, right? So, you know, I think that's
important
too. Yeah. Just talk about a little bit about the renaissance of just Canadian basketball right now. Like, I think we're in a golden era basically right now, you know, as you being a part of that as well, from all the kids that are coming down, the hundreds of kids that have scholarships in the States, to, you know, a lot of the NBA players like Wiggins, you know, Corey Joseph, you know, Jamal Murray, Tyler Ennis, and, you know, everybody else, Tristan Thompson, all the NBA players that are there. Dylan Brooks, he's about to enter. You got kids like, you know, like one of your players, Marcus Carr. You got Lindell Wigginton, and, you know, Shea Brissett. All these kids that are, you know, about to make, you know, like major moves on the next level, you know, for college. Like, how far do you see the rise of this success going, and like, how far do you see this continuing at this point?
You know, a great question. It's interesting because it's you know, like, I went to the BioSteel All Canadian game last night, mm-hmm. and you know, I was highly impressed at the level of talent, you know, and athletes on the floor. And then, you know, since yesterday, I've heard from a couple of people that might have been the best collection of talent in the event's 3-year history.
I agree.
Right.
I agree.
And then you got to think that last year you had two guys drafted in the lottery, you know, from that game. So, mm-hmm. It's amazing, man. Honestly, just you know, to have a front court seat to kind of see these kids grow and mature and just kind of embrace the stage and you know, the platform that's been kind of paved, you know, for them. But that's all it really is, man. I mean, I think there's been talent up here forever. Mm-hmm. You know, just looking back, right? I mean, we probably didn't know how talented, you know, we actually were.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes it's all about, you know, relativity. It's all relative to what you know, right? So, I mean, you know, I would go play all across the city, and that's how you would figure out, like, how good you were.
Right.
But it still was, you know, within your city. You know, you weren't going down and playing all across America, or, you know, you're not flying out to, you know, BC, or, you know, it's all pretty much local. So now, you know, with the pathway that's been paved through AAU basketball and travel basketball, you know, if you got some talent, that, you know, everyone's going to know about you. You get with the right program, you know, you'll be able to provide a platform, you know, for you to expose that talent. And, you know, college coaches and you know, scouts and people recognize talent. You know, there's enough out there where the industry is big enough where people are out there hunting for it, you know, looking for it, evaluating it. You know, so I think it's always been there, but just now, again, with you know, with AAU and just with the travel teams and the whole exposure piece, with social media and the way kids are able to connect with coaches, you know, immediately and post highlights, and you know, it's just kind of shrunk everything where it's easier to connect the talent with the opportunity. Where, you know, when we came up, you know, there wasn't like this, so we had to go. You had to go and, you know, show yourself in front of these people and prove yourself, you know, on their grounds, right? So it's just amazing to see how far it's come, though. Yeah. I think what's more impressive it's how quickly it's come.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember the very first podcast I had last year, I had had my brother Curtis on it, and one of the points that was brought up in it was because we were talking about Vince Carter and basically like his legacy in the city of Toronto. But the one of the big things we was talking about was that Vince Carter was part of the story, but there's been so much great players and, you know, and teams and different things just in the city of Toronto as it was. That also lends down this path of all these players that are, you know, being able to go through now, like even from the training, you know, like back in, you know, like back in our time, like we didn't have like a hoop factory, you know what I mean? Like we didn't have that, like, where, you know, like things like that. And there's so much different, you know, like people like such as yourself and everything else that's kind of like pushing their knowledge along. So it's like the coaching that maybe say like say our generation maybe didn't get as, you know, like, and we had some good coaches, but you know what I mean? Like there's, like just generally now, I think it's just a lot better.
I think we always had, you know, I think what's unique about this market and part of, you know, the big reason why you're seeing, you know, there would be so much success and now you're seeing kind of the consistency in that is that, you know, we've got one of the most, if not the most diverse gene pool, you know, in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so you got everything here. You got a mix of everything. You got, you know, African, you got, you know, Caribbean, West Indian, Eastern European, Asian, you got everything in a melting pot where, okay, you know, you're going to produce some athletes, you know, you're going to produce some seven-footers, you're going to produce some track stars, like Andre DeGrasse is another, you know, perfect, you know, case of that, like a kid who's playing a different sport, but, you know, possesses world-class speed. Right, that no one picked up on until, you know, but much later in his athletic career, right? So it's like, you know, we have that unique source here where you know, I think we keep producing the athlete, you know, so you know, we'll have that to our advantage. And then, yeah, like, the you know, just the exposure, like you said, to the early development, the training, the expertise, just the hours in the gym in general are way up. You know, compared to our generation, I mean, there's a kid I watched this year have a phenomenal freshman year, Kobe McEwen at Utah State. And, you know, I remember Kobe in my camp at maybe 12 years old, and it was his first exposure to basketball. And he never ended up playing for my teams, but literally, I got a video and a picture of him where I was teaching him how to shoot. Like, this is the basics of shooting. So to see him this, you know, to get this far and have that kind of year, it's like, I don't know what kind of impact that, you know, that 1 week or, I think he's, you know, he spent one entire summer at our camp.
Right.
You know, so he spent 4 weeks just working on and just getting better and building that work ethic. Those things that we talked about, just really honing on all of his skills and, you know, just getting a base. You know, you don't know the impact things like that have. And then you see him down the road and it's like, whoa, this kid's freshman of the year, and I think he even made like all conference. And it's like, whoa, like, you know, like Canadian kids weren't doing that back when we left.
Yeah.
You know, there was a, you know, there was a different learning curve, right? So, you know, things like that, like, you know, like that's the evidence, you know, for me that like, you know, the raw material is here, like the athletes are here. It's just, you know, if the right people get their hands on them at the right time and, you know, the right coaches are involved and kind of a good, you know, support system at home, and all those things are also, you know, big, you know, factors. But if all that comes together, yeah, you could definitely see, you know, Toronto, you know, Canada, but, you know, Toronto specifically, you know, continuing to just, you know, produce players.
Because, I mean, it's beautiful because, I mean, you know, there's always been a history, like, here, Montreal, like, Vancouver, different places. Like, there was always... It's one of those things where there was always basketball, like there was always players. There was always, like, we could talk about all the legends of that we've seen, you know, like back in the day. And it's like, and to see like these kids now having that realistic shot of not just, you know, hey, you know what, you know, like I got this scholarship, cool. Now it's like, no, I you know, I might be Kobe, you know, and it's a realistic thing that they can actually touch now. I think it's amazing.
When you talk about the motivation, right, like that's what I mean. Like, there's a different motivation, right? So we went from being motivated to get a scholarship, and that was, you know, that's a big-time motivation, you know, in itself.
Yeah.
But you're talking about now saying, you know, no, my ambition is, like, to be a lottery pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she talked about being motivated and, you know, being inspired, right? Like, all of those things, again, I think help shape your character. Right, so you got kids growing up with that. The kids, you know, the kids that I've coached, you know, they want to play in the NBA.
Yeah,
you know, there's a, you know, I mean, like, you know, there's a good hand for that. Like, coach, my ambition is to play in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think we were really that ambitious when we were coming up. Right, it just wasn't. You know, the game wasn't at that level yet. You know, there were no. You know, there was no one from the community that you can actually, you know, look at and say, yeah, well, they've done that, right? So,
yeah.
You know, these kids have got that. You know, they've got kids from their back, you know, players from their backyards. You know, Corey, you know, Corey's from our backyard. You know, Corey, grew up in Eastern, you know, in the gym, right? It's just like, you know, things like that really resonate, you know, and they really help motivate, I think, and you know, just make it, you know, tangible, you know, for kids that are coming behind them. So, you know, you got all that kind of in the mix as well, and so it's fertile ground, man. Like, honestly, like that game yesterday was, you know, I was really impressed just with the level of talent.
Yeah, same here, because I went to the very first one they had. I think before the BioSteel one, they used to play at the ACC. I think it was just the All Canadian game. And I think the first one, I think Notus was actually, I think he was playing in that game actually. It's come a long way, because I was watching the game on TSN and they cut the feed halfway through the third quarter, so I didn't get a chance to watch the game. Yeah, I felt like it was the 80s all over again, Vi. Like, it just went right to hockey again. Like, you're just like, all right, you know, cool. World Cup championship highlights, top 10. All right, cool. We're gonna watch this instead. All right. You know, but you know what though, like honestly, I was from at least from when it got cut off, I was really impressed. Like, I was impressed by the amount of talent that was at this game.
You know, and really, like, Montreal, like, showed up.
I know, like Luka Wentz, you know, Dort.
They were at Dort, and there was another kid too. Forget his last name, but he had a really good game. Shot the ball, you know, really well. Just, I mean, kids from Montreal just showed really well, I thought, you know, better than, you know, normally I think the past, 2 years, it's been a kid from, you know, from Toronto, right? So, you know, it's good to see that mix. It's good to see that, you know, someone from Montreal was able to kind of, you know, steal the show.
Yeah, that Dort kid, I mean, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but yeah, he really showed out yesterday. It was great to see, man, like. And Jalen Llewellyn and Alexander Walker, these kids, it's like I said, man, there's a lot of talent and there's more coming. You know, that's the beauty of this. There's more coming down the line too. It's a great time.
There's a lot of talent, man, and like they're going like to the big stage, man. You know, there's three or four kids in that game, you know, and Marcus, you know, Shea, Shamil, you know, who else? I think there's another one, but there's at least three or four of them. Nikhil, you know, went to UTech.
Yeah.
You know, you got four or five kids possibly, you know, go to ACC schools. You know, so I mean, you're talking big time college basketball. You're talking, you know, Duke, North Carolina. You know, you're talking, you know, going into, you know, some of the biggest venues in college basketball, and just having that opportunity. So I mean, you know, if these kids are able to rise to that level, which I think some of them are, man. You know, again, you know, they're going to go through another huge transition as they enter college, but again, just, you know, from my experience, like, You know, that's where some, you know, that's where probably most of your development is going to really take place. So I'm excited to see what happens for a lot of them at that level, because, you know, they've got a great base that they're going in with.
What do you think the sport will be in about 10 years? You think at that point, you think it'll actually be able to really compete with hockey in Canada anyway?
I don't know, man. I mean, that's I think it's tough, right? I think, you know, can it compete in terms of popularity? I think yes. Mm-hmm. Can it take over the culture? That's a different story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, that's deep rooted. You know, that's just part of the climate here, man. Oh, right. So, you know, basketball is still a winter sport.
Yeah.
You know, so that's tough to say. But in terms of popularity, you know, especially as you know, Canada, you know, continues to be a destination, you know, for immigrants. I mean, you know, no one coming here is, you know, coming thinking I'm gonna lace them up on the ice. You know, it's probably, you know, you're probably coming from a warmer climate, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, winter probably is the most attractive thing about, you know, being in Canada. So, you know, definitely, I could definitely see it, that happening. And honestly, I think around the world, basketball is going to take another step forward in terms of popularity. Like, I think this money factor, I read somewhere this is going to be, I think I was telling your brother this too, you know, soccer, you know, was forever, you know, the highest earning sport, you know, for an athlete, you know, on average. So, I think in the Champions League or in the Premier League, I think on average, you're like at $4 or $5 million, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, with the new CBA, I'm reading that, like, the average salary amongst NBA players is going to be $9 million. So if I'm just going to double, it is going to double, and then some, what it is in soccer. Right? And that's a big reason why soccer is such a popular sport. Aside from it being very accessible, mm-hmm. the fact that traditionally it's been the highest paid sport in every country.
Yeah.
You're a soccer player, you've made it, right? So, mm-hmm. so basketball is going to overtake that spot. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that affects the growth of the game.
And it's funny because I think for it to, like, truly, you know, and I can see being as popular as hockey, I think we're, not to say it'll take over, but it'll really be on that same level to me, is if you can get a couple of more, I would say, superstars on the level of like a Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid for hockey. Like, if you get like a LeBron James type that's coming from Canada or from Toronto or wherever, and they're just basically just crossing genres and blends with their popularity and their craft. Like, I think that could actually, if you get like one or two of those guys, I think that could really, you know, really push this along further. And it's already going into a great space as it is right now anyway. But I think that, like, if you get somebody that's like, you know, like Wiggins is one for sure that's, you know, he's really building himself to be like a great player. But, you know, but I know there's more coming where it's like they're going to be like a no doubt surefire superstar, you know, that just changes the course of the league. And, you know, and if they, like I said, if a couple of them can come from Canada, you know, then that's, I think that's where it could really push hockey further. You know, I mean, hockey, you know, it is what it is. It's that's, you know, that's this, that's the culture, and that's what it's going to be. And that's, and it's great, you know, but I mean, as a guy that's like, you know, like a basketball fan, basketball head at heart, like it would be nice to see, you know, them get a little competition anyway, you know.
It'll be cool. For sure.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see that at the very least. And as far as your comment with, like, you know, like the West Indian kids or people come from warmer climate, I guess you're not gonna be, you know, you're not gonna see like a bobsledding thing like Cool Runnings or anything coming along the line anytime soon, I guess, right?
No, I don't think so.
Nope. Anyways, before I let you go, I'll ask just a few more just NBA questions as a whole. With the draft coming up now, the 2017 draft, which is, you know, from by all accounts, is supposed to be the best draft since 2003, the LeBron, Wade, Melo, Bosh draft, right? Like, this is at least what it's predicted. We don't know what the future is going to hold for these kids, but at least that's what the prediction is right now. So, like, out of all the kids, I'll ask you really quickly, like, out of the potential draft picks that you see from De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Dennis Smith, Josh Jackson. Which one do you see, or do you believe that has like the best, that has the highest ceiling out of this draft? Who do you think is going to be the best out of that draft?
It's honestly really tough to say. Like, I'm actually going to pull it up on my phone right now as we speak about it. But you know, Ball, like obviously Ball is getting, you know, like a ton of hype. And I had a chance to see him in person last year in his senior season at Chino Hills.
Yeah.
And he definitely has, you know, he definitely has some rare quality and abilities that are obviously, you know, if you're, you know, if you're trying to build your team, you know, you always want to get, you know, that point guard and then that front court player. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, that's how you tend to see, like, you know, those two positions, you know, tend to be like the number one picks.
Yeah.
Like that dominant big or like that dominant point guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he, you know, just like his vision, you know, combined with his size and, you know, his athleticism is pretty athletic, you know, for a guy, you know, with his build and frame. And he just has a great feel for the game. And I think anybody would love to play with him, you know, because he's looking to pass, he's looking to get guys better. So, you know, that's rare in today's game,
mm-hmm.
That you find kind of someone that everyone really wants to play with. So, you know, but I mean, it's tough. I mean, Josh Jackson had his ups and downs this year, but looked amazing at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jason Tatum, Dennis Smith, you know, again, like another point guard who just, you know, athletically, you know, just really separates himself, you know, from other guys at his position.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. Honestly, it's a toss-up, man. Like, Marco Fultz, I watched a lot of him this year as well. Like, it's really efficient and just like the uncanny ability to like just make the right decisions like all the time. Just like, you know what I mean, just like, you know, like almost every decision works out, you know, positively. So it's just like, you know, like I'm seeing some guys here that really, you know, with him and Ball, who really probably been talked, you know, about the most in terms of being, you know, the number one pick.
Yeah,
I think those two guys just have, you know, have something that's a bit more cerebral
than everybody,
you know,
else.
Some of the other guys, and I think Skelb kind of see that.
Mm-hmm.
That they play at a different pace, and you know, they just kind of see the game, you know, probably in slow motion. You know, so I think those two, man. I think what they've done as freshmen at the college level, and they're both pretty consistent. I mean, Ball, you know, led, you know, UCLA to you know, top five ranking in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't go as deep as they probably, you know, had hoped to in the tournament, but you know, nonetheless had a great year. Folks, you know, not the same, you know, a losing situation, never really got things together there as a team. You know, but I like Malik Monk too. Like Monk may be my favorite player to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, probably a bit undersized, you know, at the two, but
he has a pro game, though, man. Like
pro game. I love his game. Yeah. I love his game. Yeah, it's a pretty deep draft. I mean, I think people are right. I mean, I don't know if it's the best since 03. I mean, it's always tough to say those things because, you know, only time will tell.
Yeah, no question. I think it's funny. I think my favorite is, well, there's two guys. I didn't get a chance to watch Fultz play that much. Actually, the only game I saw him play actually was against UCLA when he played against Ball. And I think Ball got, you know, they won pretty handily. But, like, he, you know, he had about 20-something points on Ball. Ball did his thing, too. But the guys I enjoy watching the most personally for me was Monk and Dennis Smith Jr., man. There's something about that kid, but I don't know, man. I think that kid is going to be, like, another Westbrook or something. Like, there's something about that kid. Even though he wasn't in the greatest situation team wise too, but I don't know. There's something different about him that I see. Nobody's really, his name's not really there. I know he's gonna be a lottery pick, but I feel like he should be like top five. I know he's not, but man, that kid, I don't know. He really impressed me every time I saw him play.
Well, I agree, man. Like when your point guard has got kind of athleticism and can make those kind of plays. I mean, you know, when you're a smaller guy leading that kind of attack, you know, when your point guard is dunking on the other team's center, Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty easy to get behind that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Follow his lead. So, like, he's got the ability to you know, just make plays that are much bigger than a 6'2 player would normally make. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I agree, man. I think he can surprise, you know, like a lot of people as being maybe at the end of the day, like the best player in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, he has that kind of ability, I think.
Yeah, he does. As a coach, how would you handle LeVar Ball if you had one of his sons on your team?
I would just ignore it, honestly. Like, I think, you know, I think he's, I think he's just playing the game. Honestly, I think that, like, a lot of this is, it's you know, I don't want to call it genius because people may take that the wrong way, but it's like, you know, this is all strategic, I think, for him. Maybe he's going a bit too far now because he's done his job with his kids, you know, top, you know, 2-3 pick. And I guess he's working the endorsement angle now, but I don't know if he's hurting his chances at the endorsement or if he's helping it, but he's done his job, you know, in terms of, you know, getting his kid to a certain level, and they did it his way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's kind of now, you know, turned him into a bigger, you know, personality because it's worked. But if he were appearing on my team, like if I picked up on what I think I picked up on in terms of what he's doing, I would just tell the kid to be focused, you know, just stay focused and let that machine, you know, work itself but you know, you focus as an athlete. Like, it's your job as an athlete. Like, I tell my guys all the time, like, your job as an athlete is to focus on your performance and to be prepared to play, right? So as long as you're an athlete, that needs to be your focus. And you got to kind of have, you know, you got to, you know, to be able to block out, you know, a lot of the stuff on the outside anyways.
That's true, because it's all, at the end of the day, it's all noise, because it doesn't matter what the father says, it's about what Lonzo could do between those lines, right?
So, exactly. But
the funny thing is, like, with LeVar, like, I think, like, I think he's crazy like a fox, you know what I mean? Like, it's just in terms of that, he did his job. He brought enough attention on the sun, because now, going into the season, you know, Lonzo Ball was, like, one of 6 or 7 players that could be number one. Now the talk is just basically him or Fultz being number one, more likely him being number one. So it's like he did his job, but I'm just, my only concern with it is that he's talking so much that he's bringing kind of like undue pressure, not so much on Lonzo, but I look at it like even like the youngest son, like LaMelo Ball, you know, because he's in 10th grade, you know, he's a 5-star recruit right now, but like, you don't know what's coming down the pipeline in the next 2 years, what beasts are coming waiting for him, you know what I mean? Because of all the notoriety that, you know, is his daddy's bringing on him and his brothers, you know, like, is, you know, he's looking for like a $1 billion deal and all this craziness. But it's like, when, but you know, 2 years from now, you don't know what kid is waiting for this guy. You know what I mean? That just, or kids, I should say, that might just go way past him. You know what I mean? So
I mean, it's definitely not gonna be the same path for the younger brothers than it was for Lonzo, because he's kind of really. He's really kind of made that like the yellow brick road, you know, like at this point, right? It's not he, you know, his father and himself really kind of paved it, but now with them coming, you know, behind him, it's going to be a different spotlight, right? It's going to be a different road. So there definitely can be some truth to what you're saying, because now they have the following, right? I think with Lonzo, a lot of it was, you know, the dad's planning and you know, because they didn't do the whole EYBL thing or, you know, UA circuit or, you know, like Adidas Gauntlet. They didn't do, you know, the traditional big shoe company endorsed circuits. They did their own thing. They did something independently led by the dad. And, you know, as far as I know, you know, everyone told him he was crazy for doing that.
Right.
You know, but he kind of masterminded, you know, the whole thing, even with the school situation. Right, so it worked. At the end of the day, like, it worked. So, you know, so it's going to be different. Now that it worked, it's going to be different for the two brothers that are coming behind. And I agree with you. Like, it could, at this point, just, you know, there, no one's sleeping on them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting everyone's best shot, and everyone's ready to make a name for themselves off of you. Right? And that's a different, you know, approach that you have to have as a as an athlete, and that's probably tough for a young player because they're young and they probably don't know that. But you know, once you it's different, you know, from being, you know, the hunter to being the hunted. So
like I said, we'll see what happens with these Suns down the line. But like watching, you know, like the balls and stuff. Like I said, it's a great story. You know what I mean, in terms of like, you know, the father putting, you know, like the attention on him and everything else. But like I said, we'll see how it plays out because, again, we don't know what's gonna happen down the line, man. You know, like I just feel like it's high school. You know what I mean? Like that development over one summer, a kid can go from okay to great. You know,
still got a long way to go, man.
Without question. You know, this is like the NBA question everybody's talking about, of course. So you know, I guess I'll have to ask it here. Who's your MVP? Is it Westbrook? Is it Harden, or do you have like a Kawhi or a LeBron?
You know what, I think it's definitely a two man race. I think it's either Westbrook or Harden, and I like the fact that this year I think is the first year that they're going to award the winner or decide on the winner a little differently, right?
Yeah.
They're doing it at the end of the season,
right?
You know, which I like because as far as I know, both players will be in the playoffs, right? I think OKC is in, right?
I think the way it's set up, I believe they're going to be playing Houston in the first round.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I might decide it, right? But I like the fact that you know, the playoff run is going to account or play a part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's important. I mean, you know, the MVP on a losing team, you could very well be the MVP, but it's just tough to justify giving the MVP award to, you know, to a team that doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, Westbrook's season is just, honestly, it's not something that I ever imagined I would see in my lifetime in terms of someone averaging a triple double.
No.
So that feat in itself is like, it's pretty tough to overlook. Like that's an elephant in any room, right? So, but then, you know, Harden's having an amazing season as well. He's turned the team around, and they're a top three team. It's a really tough race. It's anyone's race. I think if Westbrook shows well, which I think he will in the playoffs, and does enough for his team to make it a series, I think at that point he gets it. You know, because I don't think his team is, you know, I mean, shit, KD left. I mean, that team, you know, that team wasn't supposed to be, you know, a relevant team.
Yeah.
You know, so he's put them on his back, you know, no doubt.
I've always thought that if somebody was going to average a triple-double, if you would have told me, like, even 2 years ago that it would be Russell Westbrook that would do that and not LeBron James, I would have thought you were insane. And especially even like a few years before that when, you know, like the biggest thing was he was taking away shots from Durant, you know, so to see this now, I think it's kind of crazy. But and then on the same time, too, when you look at Harden, you know, after Dwight Howard left and the players they got, I mean, I thought offensive they were going to be good, you know, but I didn't see Harden really changing that team. But then again, I shouldn't be that surprised because when they were in OKC, you know, he was a good passer. He was a facilitator, right? So seeing it now, like how like he kind of went back to that. Plus, he still kept up the scoring. You know, he's still, you know, still grabbing boards. He actually improved a little bit more on defense. You know, he's no Kawhi Leonard, of course, but you know, like he took those steps to like he almost did a 180 from last year. And it's hard to say. Like honestly, I was kind of like on the Harden bandwagon where I was like, nah, he should be the MVP regardless of what Westbrook's doing. But in these last couple of weeks, to see Westbrook dropping like 50, 60 points with a triple-double and stuff, now I'm like, man, I don't know. I think it might have to go Westbrook's way.
No, it's through that. To do that at that level, I mean, it's just unreal, man.
Yeah, it's insane.
As a guard, it's insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, it's insane.
And he's leading the league in scoring.
I mean, his motor and mentality, like, whole nother level, man. Like, a whole nother level.
Yeah, it reminds me of young Jordan, just that crazed mentality.
Dude, that's what I was about to say. Like, it's funny. He's a Jordan sponsored athlete, and it's like he's like one of the closest things to like embodying that kind of mentality. Where it's like he's trying to kill you.
Yeah, literally, like every time. Like I watched the game a few weeks back when they're playing the Suns, and he went after. Who's the guy was in the dunk contest? Derrick Jones Jr. Whatever his name is, but he was guarding him. He was trying to guard Westbrook full court, and I mean, even a little matchup like that, Westbrook took so personally. It was a throwback to like those '80s and '90s, you know, NBA days. Like just that mentality of just like, you know what? Even just me bringing up the ball up the floor, I want to kill you. You know, like that's why I gotta love Westbrook when it comes to that, man. Like he's
no. I mean, I think that's the first thing like that I respect is like this dude is relentless. Like you gotta like the minute like you know the minute he steps on the court, you know what he's bringing. Like you know if you're not ready to play, he's gonna embarrass you. And that's like you don't see that too often, like in today's NBA. Like it's a more friendly NBA, right?
It's
different. It's not the rivalry that, like you said, in the '80s and '90s that really the NBA was built on. You know, the players are a lot more sociable and friendly, and the friends off the court.
Yeah,
like, he looks like he doesn't need a friend. Like I don't even care if you're my friend.
And it's funny because even the stuff with Durant, it's like a part of me is like, you know what? I kind of like the fact that they're not talking, you know, I kind of like the fact that he took it personally because like you relate to that mentality from back in the day. So it's like, yeah, I know it's a much friendlier environment now. But I kind of like the fact that, you know what? Nah, I don't really want to speak to you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like I kind of like that. Yeah, we in the All-Star game together, but. You know, I might pass you the ball just this one time, you know, and after that, yeah, don't talk to me again. Don't look my way after that. Like I like it. I can't lie. I like it.
No doubt.
All right. Well, on that note, sir, hey, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the app today, man. Like it was much appreciated. You know, you're definitely welcome back anytime, man, for sure.
For sure, man. It was fun, bro.
Yeah, man. So, and anything you want to plug before you go, like with regards to like the summer and everything?
We got our 13th annual summer development camp kicking off in July. So we got three locations. We got a spot in Toronto at North Toronto High School. We got a spot in Markham, and we got a spot out in Ajax. So we got 6 weeks of summer camp open to kids from 6 to 15, and it's. All the stuff that I talked about earlier, man, just skills, drills, work ethic, you know, just development, you know, holistically, just, you know, building these kids up and just getting them in shape and just, you know, teaching them about, you know, what it takes and then, you know, really tapping into some fundamental, you know, defensive and offensive concepts. So you'd be amazed at, you know, of like how different these kids are growing up in terms of, you know, their exposure and their entry into the game where, you know, we played at the park, you know, we played pickup, we played at lunch, right? So we, you know, we learn how to play by playing with different people and playing in different environments. And, you know, you play with some older guys, you know, they tell you to pass and screen away, you know, pass and cut, you know, some of these basic concepts have been lost because these kids aren't playing nearly as much and just, you know, the way they're entering the game is just, you know, different. So, you know, we definitely have, you know, evolved from just more of a skills and drills camp to really including elements of you know, conceptual, you know, development, just teaching kids kind of how to read the game, how to see the game and how to read and react. So, we do all the physical stuff and then we try to, you know, teach them that. Yeah, man, so you can check us out on online at thehoopfactory.com, and then on the other side, on the AAU side, we're just getting set here to head out in a couple weeks on the road and start the spring exposure tour. And you're looking forward to that. I'm coaching a U15 team that I'm really excited about that includes your nephew Jalen Celeste, who you know I'm really big on, and you know, the excited about. So we got a great team. I say I got about 4 to 5 high major guys that I'm starting to tell every college coach about, you know. So I'm excited to see how they develop under me over the next 3 years and how that team grows. And I'm really lucky to be part of a project that's being done by the National Film Board of Canada. That's actually filming a documentary about the growth of basketball. So kind of, you know, what we've been talking about. So they've chosen us as the AU program to follow. So we're really excited to have the cameras on them. And we're excited about it. So it's going to be another great spring. And then we'll get back here in May and June and keep working, keep prepping. And then we'll be back on the road in July, touring the U.S. and just putting our kids in front of college coaches.
That's cool. And Jalen, if you're listening, that means you ain't doing your homework. Do your homework, man. Do your homework and make sure.
That's a good kid, man.
Nah, I'm watching it, man. He's gonna be all right, man. He's definitely gonna be fine in that aspect. So like I said, thank you for that. And yeah, like I said, man, anytime, man, you ready to come back? Just let a brother know.
Oh man, just hit me up. Let me know what's good, and I'll definitely make some time, bro.
Okay, all right, bro. Thank you all for tuning in to the latest episode of the AF Podcast. And special shout out goes out to my guest this week, Vidal Messiah, the founder of the Northern Kings AAU program. To follow up on all his programs, make sure you log on to his websites, thehoopfactory.com, as well as kingsnationbasketball.com. As always, I appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in to the AF Podcast. To stay tuned for more podcasts and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Vidal Messiah, this is Cal C, and this is the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Also, rest in peace to the great Charlie Murphy. Unfortunately, he passed away as I was editing the rest of this podcast. You know, he's most famous for the Hollywood stories on the Chappelle Show, but I've been a fan of his since he was the real MC Gusto in CB4. For any of y'all who remember that, you will be missed. Rest in peace, Brother Darkness. Rest in peace. Until next time, folks, peace. We out.